Hello, everybody in listener land. It's Jeanette Perkis again for another episode of Jeanette's Autism Show, which is this show, surprisingly enough. And today I'm joined by a lovely guest, but before that, I better introduce myself and introduce the program. So this program is auspiced through the wonderful people at Positively Autistic in the UK. So a big shout out to Joe and to Sarah and to Tracy over there doing great things with their wonderful, they have a wonderful Facebook page that you should like. And I'm Jeanette, you probably came across me somewhere. If not, I'm an author, I'm an autism advocate, I'm a public speaker. It all sounds very scary, doesn't it? But I'm quite nice. And today I'm sitting here at Melbourne University at the Halls of Residence with my guest, who I'll introduce in a bit. We're actually here for the Autism Cooperative Research Centre. Research Academy. That's what we're doing, Research Academy, which is about peer research between autistic people and academic researchers. Of course, some autistic people are also academic researchers. So we're having a lovely time. It's been described as autistic space, so it's mostly autistic people, and it's a wonderfully inclusive place to be, and I find I'm able to talk to all sorts of wonderful people. And one of them is a lady I have here in my dormitory room, and her name's Danielle Foster. So welcome, Danielle.
Welcome, Jeanette, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak on the program.
Oh, it's always lovely to speak to you. Now, could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hello, listeners. My name is Danielle. I live in North Queensland. I'm married with two fair kids, Staffordshire Bull Terriers Rock.
Oh,
not that I'm biased. And I'm currently studying a Bachelor of Social Work through JCU part-time externally. My journey began after my diagnosis with Asperger's in 2007, later confirmed by Dr. Tony Atwood in 2011. Diagnosis was a watershed event for me as it really allowed me to put my identity and my life into an understandable context for the first time. I finally realised that I was not mad, bad or defective with, quote marks. For most of my life, I was constantly misunderstood, stigmatised and often abused, and lived a barren, isolated existence because of society's attitudes towards me. I know what it is to be the unwanted stranger, forever on the outside looking in. Since my diagnosis, I have increased in self-knowledge and my life has been profoundly transformed.
I'm very glad about the profound transformation and very upset about the world, because sadly the world's not just horrible to you or me, it's horrible to a lot of us, especially on the spectrum. And this is, I guess, what we're doing in life, is to try and address that.
Indeed.
I've actually known you for a couple of years. We met at the Asia Pacific Autism Conference in 2015, and we were both part of a mentoring program. What do you think the value of mentoring is for autistic people?
Mentoring is vital, particularly for autistic people. It's had a huge impact on me personally. I mean, since my diagnosis, in 2007, I was really searching for my people, a tribe, and mentors that I could relate to. And luckily, I found a few good books written by autistic adults. Leanne Holliday-Williams.
Yes, she's great.
Is one of them, and they were hugely important for my formative sort of journey towards my autistic identity.
Yeah. It's wonderful reading the accounts of other people and hearing other people speak about autism, and often I find when I'm looking at someone's book or their video or their blog, it just strikes a chord with me and my own experience. And I think, I mean, a lot of people are doing blogging and stuff these days, and I think the more the merrier. I think it's really great, because for everyone, someone's going to resonate more. So I might read something and it's more meaningful to me than it might be for someone else. So the more the merrier. Let's have lots of autistic voices.
Definitely. I couldn't agree more with you, Jeanette. I often think that some people in the autistic community want to reach a consensus, and that means getting rid of some of the other voices that don't necessarily concur with their own.
Yeah.
I heartily disapprove of that as a thought process.
Yeah, I think that's unhelpful for anyone, isn't it, to try and sort of knock all the edges off, and actually the edges are the interesting bits and the divergent opinions, which are actually really important. And even if I have an opinion that no one else shares, well, probably someone else will share it, but if I don't say it, then, you know, as long as it's not damaging or rude or offensive or something, but it is a challenge. So we're in my room, and anyone who's ever been in my hotel room before knows that I spread out everywhere, and poor Danielle's sitting there next to all my jewellery with this. I bring quite a lot with me, and it's just like, where do I leave my elbow? So I just moved it.
Very,
so that was
very
the
interesting that was sensory the, tools. So.
They're pretty. Oh, look, this one's good. Have a go at that one. I've just gave her a gold, well, it's a fake gold ring with a big sparkly crystal, but it does lovely sparkly bits. I do like that. It's nice at this event that we're all just sitting here playing with our fidgets, and it's all good, you know, and so it should be.
Definitely.
Yes. So we were talking about some difficulties that autistic people face. So what, as a woman, of course, you have to be really careful with gender, because there aren't just two genders. No. So you can't just say autistic women are like this, autistic men are like that, because within women and men, those sort of polar binaries, there are differences within that. But within the whole, so people talk about a female type of autism, but I often think that's quite unhelpful unless you clarify it with, well, yes, there are common experiences, but there are for others as well, and gender is fluid. Gender is a spectrum rather than a radio button. So.
Okay. Yes.
So what issues do you think autistic people, and especially women, face?
Well, women in general face a whole host of issues despite the massive progress that we've made since the 1960s and 70s. I think that all autistic people can face discrimination and various forms of abuse and so on, but I think that's compounded when you are an autistic woman.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's, I think we face a number of discriminations. Mm-hmm. And it's the same from anyone else from a different group as well, someone
indeed,
who's queer or trans, or someone who's from an Aboriginal background or something. As an autistic person, you face discrimination, and then as whichever other group you're in, you can face discrimination too.
Exactly.
And that's not well understood. It's a concept called intersectionality, which is gaining understanding, which is really useful to know. And it's a useful way of looking at things. Mm-hmm. Yes. So with all those issues, what do you reckon needs to change, or what are some of the things that need to change?
I think more effective and standardised diagnostic criteria and tools for females and males on the spectrum, or autistic people, whatever your particular wording is. I'd also say that mandatory autism cultural training developed by autistics for society, e.g. in the education sector, criminal justice system, clinicians, GPs, allied health professionals, community health and mental health services, etc., etc. Supports and adjustments throughout the lifespan, employment, for example, and not just in the early years.
There's that whole stereotype, isn't there, that even now there's a stereotype from a lot of people that autistic people are all kids, and when you turn 18, the diagnosis just disappears and suddenly you're non-autistic, which is, of course, not true. And I think that's one of the problems that we get from society is that, I mean, you look at a non-autistic child, they're very different from a non-autistic adult.
Indeed.
It's the same with autistic kids. And we get this thing, oh, well, you'll be like that forever. It's like, would you say that to a four-year-old who's not on the spectrum, you know?
Exactly. Yes.
It's a lack of perspective, I think.
Indeed. Yes. So I'm also thinking that there needs to be sort of professional autistic networks and organisations led by autistics to assist the autistics with transitions to employment and all of the job sort of the invisible codes and things that happen in the workplace and employment and so on.
Employment's a really difficult area. It shouldn't be. It actually shouldn't be a problem at all. Employment is, you know, other people from different, you know, diversity groups have a disadvantage in employment, but not to the degree that autistic people do. The statistics are awful. I mean,
exactly.
It's less than, well, it's 34% is the latest statistic we have, and that's not on employment, that's on participation in employment, which includes people who are looking for work.
What really does that mean? Participation.
Well, there's a reason. It's just the statistical definition is that it means anyone who's looking for work, so that's anyone on the dole and on or unemployed, and anyone who's working for 1 hour or more per week. So within that 34%, I work full time. I know a few other autistics who work full time. Most of us don't. A lot of us are underemployed and a lot of us are unemployed. So it is somewhere it really, really needs to change. And things are happening, but they need to keep happening quicker, I think.
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, Jeanette, but I do see a certain a paradigm shift happening, even from a few years ago.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. I think, and some people say, oh no, nothing's changed. Well, if you think nothing's changed, then you obviously haven't been looking out the window lately, because things have changed. Mm-hmm. They're not perfect. They're not right. They need work. But in terms of my world as an advocate, now I first started advocating a long time ago, but I really only got on this journey how I would consider seriously about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And in 5 years, I've seen so many changes. I've seen the idea of the model of autism as deficit and illness and brokenness. Yes. It's still there, but autistic people won't stand for that. And we'll say, no, that's not right. And that messaging goes on to people providing services. There's a lot more discussion of things like neurodiversity. The thing that really got me was last year, I think SBS TV on their online, you know, on their web-based medium published an article on neurodiversity. Now, the fact that a mainstream media outlet would publish such a thing is good enough. But the thing that really made me happy was I didn't know half the people they'd interviewed, which means the pool of advocates who are prepared to talk to the media has grown exponentially. When I started, when my first book came out 11 years ago, there were like five advocates in Australia that I knew of, and that was it, you know, and anyone else was doing it. These days, there's so many of us, and at this event, there's all the presenters, or most of the presenters are autistic, and it's just things are changing, and I feel it's building momentum. It's certainly not there yet. We've got a long way to go, but it is building momentum, and I feel a lot happier now than I did a few years ago.
Yes, I'd concur with you, Jeanette. When I got diagnosed back in 2007, there was hardly any. I knew very few autistic advocates by I'd not met many autistic people, and in the years since then, I've met many autistic advocates and people at uni and with doctorates and so on, advocating for themselves and for others and forming groups and, you know, being part of this wonderful neurodiversity movement.
Yeah, I think it's great. Yeah. Now, that leads to the next question, which is what kinds of things do you do in relation to autism advocacy?
Okay, well, I've done a few things. As you mentioned previously, we met in 2015 at the APAP conference, part of the autism mentoring program there. It certainly opened my eyes to a wider sort of larger movement than just myself.
Yeah.
And it really kicked off my journey to sort of professionalise my advocacy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so I decided to embark again on university study, and I'm currently doing social work, which is taking up most of my time.
Oh, yes. I keep forgetting that other people aren't like me and I can cram minutes into hours and somehow do 500 things at once.
Time management skills. Quite impressive.
I always say about my workload, it's kind of like a TARDIS, like it's bigger on the inside, which it is.
Yes. So, yes, and I'm a public speaker and stuff in my local community, and quite keen to get sport and rec happening for people with autism and other disabilities.
Yeah.
And I'll also be presenting at APAC 2017 this September.
Yeah, we'll catch up again because I'm there too, which will be fun. I'm looking forward to that one. It's going to be, it's going to, I always love these events because you catch up with people you hardly ever see in person.
Exactly. Yes.
Love it.
And in the meantime, in my copious spare time, I'm trying to write a book about animal therapy and autism, specifically horse therapy.
Yeah.
And I've also got a few other book ideas at the back of my mind, which is slowly taking shape. I'm quite interested in potentially writing a book for partners of autistic women.
Oh, that sounds good. I don't know that there is such a thing. I know this one Rudy Simone did about for women partners for autistic men, but I think that's a really good idea, the male part. Because that, I don't think that, I haven't seen that written about. So
no, neither have
that
I.
That sounds really good.
Yes.
And very useful as well.
Indeed, So that's what me at the moment.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, you're doing something else, which I keep seeing on your Facebook. You get pictures of you sitting on a horse looking fantastic. Now, as much as my love in the natural world is cats, your love in the natural world is horses. So you're quite an accomplished equestrian. I'm very impressed. Can you talk about horses? I'm sure you want to talk about horses.
Oh, yes. And I shall try and condense my, give you a Reader's Digest condensed version of my love affair with horses. Oh, my love affair with horses really began when I was a child. They just fired my imagination and I've been passionately in love with them since. I've only recently started riding again as an adult for the last 5 or 7 years, and yes, I've started competing in dressage and working equitation and all sorts of wonderful things. Yes,
wonderful. I love horses. I'm a bit wary of them. I haven't grown up around them, but they're very they have a presence. I love the presence of a horse. So I remember when I was about 5, my parents took me, it must have been the RSPCA or something, and it was the cattery, and they had about like 100 cats, and you could talk through and pat them. And I just remember being, I'd never felt like that. No other experience had prepared me for that sense of love and connection I felt with those cats. When I was, even if I see a cat on the internet, even a photo, not a cat that I know, but just a random, but there's lots of them, and I think, oh, I feel so good. Just looking at cat pictures of cats makes me happy. Now, that is, in my understanding, that is quite a common thing for autistic people, that we have that really close connection. And your connection, I would imagine, is with horses.
Yes, it is. Also my dogs, because I can keep them in the house with horses. You generally can't. They go to a toilet rather than not. yes, I mean, that peace and that tranquility that I have around horses is amazing. And I don't know if non-autistic people feel that with...
I understand that they don't. I understand from what I've read and what I've seen that it is quite unique to autistic people, that incredibly close proximity. It's not always cats or horses or rats or dogs or whatever, but that... I'm sure you were talking about writing a book about it, which I definitely read and I probably endorse. But because I think that's it. In the mental health book that Emma Jane and I wrote, there is a chapter on pets and animals, which is really, really important, I think, and it is... And for non-autistic people to understand about us, that if you get a child, a puppy or a kitten or a horse, and that is their interest, that will improve their life.
In so
exponentially.
Many ways.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
And not just improve their life, but it's going to teach them so much, so many fundamentally important life skills.
Yeah.
Caring about another being, looking after, recognising and looking after another being.
Yeah.
You know, and all the life stages that that animal has as well, dealing with grief and all sorts of important things.
Oh, it really, it's so important, and it really makes such a difference. When I got Mr. Kitty, and I know everyone's heard the story, but when I got Mr. Kitty, we actually bonded. I remember feeling the moment we bonded. It was within minutes, seconds of me holding him. I don't pick up cats and hold them if I don't know them. I'm a cat person. I don't know, you don't do that.
Yes.
And with Mr. Kitty, I just instinctively held him to my chest, and he's like, I can remember that moment, and I said to the lady, the cat rescue lady who brought him and a bunch of kittens over, I said, yeah, take the kittens, I'm having this one. And she was delighted because he's a black cat and they're harder to home because people are stupid and superstitious, yes. He was a grown up, or he was a teenager, he was 10 months old, and people want cute fluffy kittens. And I just thought, this cat is my cat, and we've been together for 4.5 years and made such a difference to my mental health. Like, there's life BK before Kitty and after K, I think, in my life has really changed everything.
I'd really like to explore that via some research and get some really hard evidence about that, because what is research is available is just my anecdotal evidence, and I really want to get some evidence base around this.
Sounds wonderful. It sounds really good. And here you are at the Research Academy, and that's the place to make those connections, or to start making those connections. I've just got one question I want to ask here, which is what is it like when you're riding your horse or spending time with horses? I know it's hard to define. Have a go.
All right. Thank you very much for asking the question. For me, it's kind of like a moving form of meditation, almost like Tai Chi or yoga or something like that. It's that centeredness and groundedness that I feel when I'm riding them or doing playing natural horsemanship games with them and that sort of thing.
I can relate. It's like with Mr. Kitty, I'm just in the space, you know, there's that, I don't need anything else.
Exactly. Yeah. It just centers our souls.
Yeah, it is, exactly. And it goes beyond just your thoughts or your feelings. It's a much deeper connection within, which I don't think people that don't know that can properly understand. And it's lovely. It's a special thing we have, isn't it?
I think it's an incredibly unique and special thing.
Yeah. So here we go. I'm going to blow your trumpet now.
Oh, wow.
You're a wonderful, strong, autistic woman. If I was a young person, I'd love to have you as a role model. I do. I really like you. I only met you briefly a couple of years ago, and I was really impressed, and I think you're very...
Why were you impressed?
I can't remember. I don't have logic about people. I have feel. I have feel. I'm much more intuitive than actually thinking I like this person because of that. Often with non-autistic people, I'll say that, and there are reasons I like people. But with you, I got a feel, and I got a feel that you were someone who could really make a big difference and that was really loving. You know, you come to everything with love and kindness, and that's good. And most people don't do that. Most people come at life with a bit of cynicism and a bit of maybe avarice and a bit of what can I get out of it. But I've never felt that with you. You're in it for the good things, which I would hope I relate to myself. I'd hope that is the case for me. People tell me it is. I'm very doubtful about this. I'm very insecure. So I think, oh, I'm so horrible. But I do like that. Thank you. I do lots of good works, if that counts for anything. I really have enjoyed meeting you. And when I found out you were coming to this event, I was very excited. I thought that was really lovely that I'd get to catch up properly with you. So it's nice having you on the radio show to get, you know, to share our conversation with other people. But it's lovely. So thank you for being you.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being you. It's wonderful.
So I think we're heading to the give advice to everyone else bit of radio show, which does happen. So what sorts of things would you tell autistic young people about how to sort of navigate life and the world?
Don't mix alcohol with cold and flu tablets.
You're right there.
Yes, indeed. All right, so discover and embrace your authentic autistic self. Do not accept the shame and stigma and invalidation that society heaps upon us in so many ways.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's very insidious ways as well.
Yes, it's very sort of unhanded. And I never pick up on it for ages. No, crap, that was something horrible. And I can't do anything because it was 3 days ago. So.
Exactly. It's very, it just makes me very angry. So a good tip, eat a healthy diet and find exercise that works for you. There's lots of good science and evidence to support this. And for me personally, it helps. I do yoga and, of course, I ride horses and do some physio and stuff as well. Yeah, so,
that's good. That's good.
It keeps my mind and body healthy. I think an important one is develop critical thinking skills.
Yeah.
You know, just about personal relationships and not putting yourself in dangerous situations and that sort of kind of stuff. And learn to develop self-advocacy and assertiveness skills. I think that's something that we as autistic people sometimes don't have.
Yeah, we really struggle with assertiveness in turn, because I find for me, I worry that I'll upset someone or I worry that that person won't like me anymore. And as I get older, I gradually understand that if you're assertive with a friend and they respond really badly, they're not a good friend. Well, and you don't want them to be hanging around. And usually, if you're assertive with a friend, they will respect that. And it might be uncomfortable for a bit, but then it often improves the relationship, I find, strangely enough.
So, I concur with that. I've had to have a few chats with various people over the years. Generally, always the relationship has been improved by that conversation.
Yeah, but it's true.
And find your passion and follow it. You never know where this may lead. Education, employment, who knows?
And I think I have this thing where I imagine that everything I do is sending out a signal or a thought to the world, or it's sending out a product, a book or something. I don't have any control of where it goes after I've let it out of my control. But it really amazes me how far some things end up going, and how if you're willing, and willingness is a really important skill, if you're actually willing and enthusiastic and you want good things, it's very rare that if you keep putting that positivity into the world, of course some people are relentlessly unlucky, but for most people, if you actually are willing and you engage with life with that kind of approach, it usually translates into something worthwhile, I find.
Have an open mindedness. Don't sort of overthink things. I think as autistic people in particular, we have a tendency to do that. Just allow things to unfold organically.
Definitely.
And I'd also say find and build a great support network, either locally in your local community or online via the huge number of great advocacy groups and that we have on social media.
Social media is a wonderful thing, isn't it? I mean, it has its drawbacks, but I find in terms of connecting with other autistic people, it's my main forum for doing that, because I know people all over Australia and all over the world. You just get on Facebook, you can message them. It's not like when I was a kid, you'd have to call your grandma in England and have to do it in the middle of the night and yell. Things have really moved on, and that's great for advocacy.
The impact of technology, particularly social media, has expanded our world in so many ways, and it has a far-reaching consequences in terms of the neurodiversity movement. I think it's really helped build a momentum.
Oh, it really has, and you can share ideas so quickly, not just in the autism world, in terms of changing things, in terms of making a difference. The online community is amazing. You can get ideas out there in seconds,
Exactly.
You used to be able to do that. So I know there are curses that come with social media. I've had some very unpleasant interactions with people that I prefer not to have had, but generally it's a very good thing, I think.
Yes, I'd concur with that, It's made a huge difference to my life and the lives of so many other autistic people.
I can't find my page. So we just had Autistic Pride Day. Do you have any quick thoughts on Autistic Pride?
Okay, Autistic Pride is something I'm becoming more aware of as I progress in my journey and discover more of my autistic self, because I've had to mask and pass for so many years. It's like, it's very like, I suppose, I'm not a gay person, but I find that there is correlations between gay pride and autistic pride in many ways, and I kind of feel that's a similar movement, so it's Yeah.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think it's interesting, the notion of pride in yourself. And so I did a whole article for Autistic Pride Day last week that was about some spectrum women. It's quite a good one. There's a number of other ones. So I sort of, Barb Cook, the editor, and I coordinated some responses to what does Autistic Pride mean to you. And the reason I got interested in it this year was that I saw on someone's post, someone had said, oh, well, you can't help being autistic, so why be proud about it? And it was a different kind of pride. I had to unpack what the issue was.
Yeah.
If you're proud for winning in a prize or for coming first in an exam, that's a very different kind of pride. So the pride you take on after years of oppression, yes, and being treated like you don't exist and being treated like you don't matter, and you say, I'm autistic and that is a good thing. Yes. That kind of pride is very different. So, yes, it's not something I can help, but the way I respond to it is definitely something I can help. Definitely. And I always come up with pride because I see the resilience of our community. I see all the things that happen to us in life and how we're still going. And the wonderful thing about autistic advocacy, if I can say this, I have a mental illness. Now, in terms of mental illness advocacy, at this point in time, a lot of people are very shy. They don't want to talk about it. So, oh, I'm ashamed. Well, just your people these days are a lot more bullshy, and that's a good thing. You know, do something bad to one of us, the rest of us are like, ah! And that, I like that. That kind of righteous anger is a really useful quality.
Yes, alienate one of us, and there are consequences now.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Oh, I know. It's wonderful. So, is there finally, we're supposed to go and have dinner with the board, and we're slightly late, but they can wait. Dinner will be open for a bit. Sorry, board, if you're listening. So is there anything else you'd just like to mention before we conclude?
Okay, living in a rural/remote area is problematic in terms of finding adequate professional or personal understanding. And I think perhaps that online services or networks can assist to fill this huge need, and it's not being currently addressed. There also needs to be more diversity in terms of representations of ethnic and higher needs autistic individuals in autistic organisations. They need to be seen and heard in the neurodiversity movement, which is not currently so much the case.
Thank you so much, Danielle. It's been really lovely talking to you. I hope I pronounced your name right as well. It really has been wonderful talking. I've wanted to talk to you for a while. Thank you. I'll probably pop this one up next Saturday. I'll let you have a listen before I do. And thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you for listening. And goodbye, everyone.
Thank you very much, Jeanette, for inviting me here today.
Thank you.